Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to take a really close look at something pretty foundational in modern software: the relationship between Java and cloud computing.
Yeah, it's a powerful pairing, and maybe a bit surprising to some, how this mature platform Java meshes so well with the flexibility of the cloud.
Exactly. We're not talking about some dusty relic here. Our mission today is to really unpack how Java achieves this, well, almost perfect synergy with today's scalable modern cloud infrastructure.
That's the goal. We need to figure out how Java holds onto its spot as like the ideal partner for the cloud. Because modern systems, they need massive scale, instant responses. And Java's stability, its whole write once, run anywhere philosophy, turns out that's a huge asset here.
Okay, so let's start high level. We all kind of know what the cloud is, right? Delivering computing resources, storage, applications, processing power over the internet.
Yep, the basics.
But what's the sheer scale we're dealing with now? And what kind of pressure does that put on a language like Java?
Oh, the pressure is immense.
Yeah.
This isn't some niche thing anymore. It's everywhere. Think about this. 94% of enterprises were using cloud services back in 2023.
94%. Wow. That's basically everyone.
Pretty much. It's the standard now. And the money follows, right? Global cloud spending, it's projected to hit nearly $800 billion by 2025.
800 billion.
Yeah. And this growth isn't just shifting existing stuff to the cloud. We're generating so much more data. We're looking at maybe 200 zettabytes stored in the cloud by 2025.
Those adabytes, how much is that?
Okay, get this. 200 trillion gigabytes. It's astronomical. And it's driven by, the Internet of Things, the need for real-time access to everything.
That real-time need feels key. You see huge platforms like Netflix or Dropbox built on this architecture, and there's a real business advantage, isn't there?
Absolutely. About half, 51% of businesses say they get faster time to market after moving to the cloud. Speed and agility.
Okay, so the cloud demands speed, elasticity, handling massive data loads. Why Java then? Isn't Java sometimes seen as, well, a bit heavy, resource intensive?
That's fair. That's kind of the central question, isn't it? Why does it stick around and thrive here? And it starts with platform independence, that write once, run anywhere mantra. Think about it. You build your app on, say, AWS, knowing you can take that exact same code and run it on Google Cloud or Azure without a massive, painful rewrite. That's huge.
Especially in a world where you don't want to be locked into one vendor.
Exactly. Avoiding vendor lock-in is a major strategic goal for lots of companies. Java helps deliver that.
Portability is one piece, but then there's stability and security. When you're distributing things across countless servers, security has to be rock solid,
Oh, absolutely non-negotiable. And Java's got strong security features built right in. Authentication, access control, encryption. It's baked into the architecture.
Which is why certain institutions rely on it.
That's right. The places that absolutely cannot fail, big banks, government agencies, they trust Java. That secure foundation means developers can focus more on the actual application logic, not building security from the ground up.
So it's portable, it's secure. What about scaling? Because the cloud is all about scaling up and down instantly. Java supports multi-threading distributed computing.
Right. It was designed with those concepts in mind long before the cloud as we know it existed. Think about giant e-commerce sites.
Like Amazon during the holidays.
Perfect example.
Huh.
They use Java and cloud infrastructure to handle those enormous, unpredictable traffic surges. Black Friday, Prime Day. It just absorbs it. Java was built for distribution.
And crucially, all that power has to be efficient. In the cloud, you pay for what you use down to the millisecond sometimes. How does Java deliver performance without wasting resources?
Okay, this comes down to the JVM, the Java virtual machine. It's pretty clever. It uses something called just-in-time, or JIT compilation. Yeah, so instead of compiling everything upfront, it compiles the Java bytecode into native machine code while the program is actually running. It optimizes based on how the code is being used right then and there.
Ah, so it adapts to the specific workload.
Exactly. That, plus the JVM's pretty smart about managing memory. So you get that high performance without necessarily the massive waste you might associate with older, heavier platforms. It tries to be efficient.
And that efficiency, that whole ecosystem, it's not just the core language, right? It's the tooling around it, the libraries, the
Oh,
frameworks.
the ecosystem is vast. Absolutely critical. You're not starting from zero. For building microservices, for instance, you've got Spring Boot. It makes getting a complex application up and running much, much simpler.
And for handling all that data we talked about.
For real-time data streams, Apache Kafka is basically the industry standard. High throughput, reliable messaging. These tools are mature, battle-tested. developers have this huge arsenal available.
Okay, so let's dive deeper into that arsenal, the specific frameworks that are really tailored for cloud development. This is the toolkit developers are actually using now to make Java feel cloud native.
Right, this is where Java really shows it's adapting. Spring Cloud is a big one. It builds on Spring Boot and adds tools specifically for distributed systems patterns. Things like service discovery, how microservices find each other, or managing configurations across many instances.
And it plays nice with the big cloud providers.
Yeah, designed for easy integration with AWS, GCP, Azure, makes bridging those environments smoother.
Okay, Spring Cloud for the general patterns. Then you mentioned data. Apache Hadoop comes up a lot there.
Hadoop is the workhorse for distributed data. I think big data processing gives you two core things. HDFS, the Hadoop distributed file system, for storing massive data sets across many machines.
Right, splitting the data up.
Exactly. And MapReduce, which is a model for processing that distributed data in parallel. If you're doing large-scale analytics, machine learning on huge data sets in the cloud, Hadoop, or related tech like Spark, which often runs on Hadoop's file system, is often under the hood.
So Hadoop handles the massive batch processing. What about things that need to be faster, more real-time? You mentioned Vert.x earlier.
Ah, Vert.x is interesting. It's designed to be lightweight, non-blocking, and event-driven. That architecture is really good for applications that need high throughput and low latency.
Like?
Think real-time communication systems, APIs handling tons of concurrent requests, or maybe big IoT platforms processing data from thousands of devices simultaneously. Because it's non-blocking, one request doesn't hold up all the others. It keeps things flowing.
Okay, and then we get to the frameworks really tackling that resource hog perception head-on, especially for containers and serverless, Micronaut and Quarkus.
Yes. This is where things get really exciting for cloud-native Java. Micronaut uses ahead of time, or AOT, compilation.
AOT, so compiling before runtime, unlike JIT.
Precisely. It does a lot of the work at build time. The result, drastically reduced startup times and a much smaller memory footprint. This is huge for serverless platforms like AWS Lambda, where you pay for execution time, including startup, and memory usage.
Faster starts, less memory. That sounds ideal for serverless. And then there's Quarkus. They call themselves supersonic subatomic Java.
Huh. Yeah, the marketing's punchy, but it's kind of accurate. Quarkus is laser-focused on containers, especially Kubernetes. It takes that AOT approach even further, heavily optimizing for minimal memory usage and incredibly fast startup.
Why is that so important for Kubernetes?
In Kubernetes, you might be spinning up and down hundreds, even thousands, of container instances constantly based on demand. If each one starts faster and uses less memory, you save significant costs and resources, and your application scales much more quickly and efficiently. Quarkus is really built for that world.
So Java clearly has the frameworks to operate effectively in these modern environments. This brings us to where you actually run these applications, the deployment models. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation, right?
Not at all. Different businesses have different needs. Security, cost, compliance. Java's flexibility fits well here. You've got the public cloud, obviously. Shared infrastructure, pay-as-you-go, global reach. Great for cost savings and scalability for many apps.
Like AWS, GCP, Azure.
The big three, yeah. Then there's the private cloud. Dedicated infrastructure for just one organization. Maybe they use tools like OpenStack to manage it. This is crucial for organizations with super high security or regulatory compliance needs. Think government. Some healthcare areas.
Okay. Public, private, what else?
There's community cloud. This is interesting. It's infrastructure shared by several organizations that have similar needs or concerns, maybe in the same industry or subject to the same regulations. They pool resources and share governance.
Can you give an example?
Maybe a group of universities sharing infrastructure for a specific research project, pooling costs for specialized computing resources they all need.
Got it. Then the really common ones we hear about, hybrid and multi-cloud.
Right. Hybrid cloud is mixing private and public clouds. This is where Java's portability shines.
Yeah.
You can run sensitive parts of an application, maybe the database with customer data, on your private cloud.
For security and control.
Exactly. But then run less sensitive, maybe more computationally intensive tasks, like anonymized data analytics, on the public cloud to take advantage of its scale and cost effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Java applications can be designed to bridge this smoothly.
And multi-cloud, that's using more than one public cloud provider.
Yep. Using services from multiple vendors like AWS and GCP and Azure at the same time. The big driver here is usually resilience, avoiding putting all your eggs in one basket and sometimes accessing best of breed services from different providers.
So like using Google's AI tools, but AWS's storage.
Precisely. A media company might use GCP for machine learning to analyze video content, but use AWS S3 for storing the vast amounts of raw footage because they prefer its storage options or pricing. Java microservices, potentially running in containers across both clouds, can communicate thanks to that platform independence and tools like Spring Cloud for service discovery. It avoids vendor dependency. Big strategic advantage.
Okay, so multi-cloud is a reality. It makes sense then that the big providers themselves are actively supporting Java, right? They want Java workloads on their platform.
Oh, absolutely. They invest heavily in it. Look at Amazon Web Services, AWS. They've got the standard stuff, EC2 for virtual machines, RDS for databases, S3 for storage, all supporting Java. But they've also put a lot of effort into making Java work well with AWS Lambda for serverless.
Addressing that cold start issue.
Yeah, they've worked on optimizing the JVM startup and memory allocations specifically for Lambda. And their AWS SDK for Java makes it easy to interact with all their services.
What about Google Cloud Platform, GCP? What's their angle?
GCP often emphasizes containers and data analytics. So seamless integration with Google Kubernetes Engine, GKE, is key. They also have App Engine, which is a managed platform that's great for running Java web apps easily. And for data, linking Java apps with BigQuery for data warehousing and Dataflow for stream batch processing is straightforward using their client libraries. They position Java as a first-class citizen, especially in data pipelines.
And Microsoft Azure. They have deep roots in the enterprise.
They do. So strong tooling integration is important for them. They make sure popular Java IDEs like IntelliJ, IDEA, and Eclipse work really well with Azure. They offer Azure App Service for web apps, Azure Kubernetes Service, AKS for containers, and importantly support Java on Azure Functions for serverless. Full commitment across the board.
It sounds like a really robust ecosystem, but it can't all be smooth sailing. Running these complex Java stacks in the cloud must come with challenges.
Oh, definitely. It's not magic. There are complexities developers wrestle with. One big one is still memory management.
Even with the JVM's optimizations.
Yeah, because while the JVM is smart, it still generally needs a certain amount of fixed memory overhead just to run. In containers, especially small ones where resources are tightly limited, that overhead can be significant. If you don't tune the JVM memory parameters just right, you can hit an out-of-memory error, an OM. And when that happens in a container, the operating system often just kills the process instantly. Poof, gone. That leads to instability if you're not careful with configuration.
Okay, memory tuning is critical. What about latency? We touched on startup time with JIT.
Right. It's ironic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
JIT compilation was a big part of Java's performance story for years. But in the cloud, especially serverless or quick scaling scenarios, that initial compilation stack at runtime means Java apps can have longer startup times compared to languages compiled ahead of time natively.
So cold starts can be worse.
They can be, yeah. It requires tuning. The good news is frameworks like Quarkus and Micronaut directly address this with AOT. Right. And even cloud providers are optimizing. Google Cloud Run, for example, has reported reducing Java startup times by up to 50% through their infrastructure tricks. So it's getting better, but it's a factor.
Then there's security configuration. Java itself is secure, but managing the whole stack.
That's the challenge. It's not just the core Java security. You're dealing with APIs, network access controls, managing secrets, and all the third-party libraries you pull in. Each dependency is a potential vulnerability. You need constant vigilance, regular audits, keeping everything updated. It's complex to get right across distributed systems.
Which ties into the last big challenge, dependency management itself.
Exactly. Modern Java apps rely on dozens, maybe hundreds, of external libraries and frameworks. Keeping track of all those versions, ensuring compatibility, avoiding conflicts, it's tough.
Things breaking unexpectedly at runtime.
It can happen. You update one library and suddenly it clashes with another, or with the underlying Java version, or the cloud environment itself. Tools like Maven and Gradle help manage this, but it requires ongoing attention and careful testing to prevent runtime surprises.
Okay, so challenges exist. Memory, latency, security, complexity, dependencies. But let's look ahead. Where is this Java Cloud partnership going? What's the future trajectory?
Well, one interesting area is AI and machine learning. Now, Python clearly dominates the research and development side of AML. No question.
Right.
But for deploying large-scale ML models into production, especially within existing enterprise systems, Java's stability, performance, and ecosystem are attractive. Libraries like Deep Learning 4J and integration with tools like Apache Spark make it viable. We might see future Java versions include more optimized APIs specifically for AI tasks.
So maybe not for building the models, but for running them reliably at scale.
Potentially, yeah. And the trend towards serverless and microservices isn't slowing down. Java is actively adapting here.
Through those frameworks like Quarkus and Micronaut.
Exactly. Their success proves Java can be lean and fast enough for serverless. Combine that with the overall industry push for distributed modular applications and Java's role, especially in sectors needing high throughput and reliability like finance or streaming media, seems secure and likely to grow.
And the core Java platform itself is evolving significantly, right? You mentioned Project Loom and Project Panama.
Yes, these are huge. Project Loom introduces virtual threads, sometimes called lightweight threads. The goal is to make it much, much easier to write highly concurrent applications without the complexity and overhead of traditional OS threads.
How does that help in the cloud?
Cloud applications are inherently concurrent, handling thousands of simultaneous requests. Loom promises to drastically improve the performance and scalability of Java apps in these highly distributed, multi-threaded environments by making concurrency simpler and more efficient. It's a fundamental shift.
Okay, Loom for concurrency. What about Project Panama?
Panama is about improving how Java interacts with native code libraries written in languages like C or C++. Historically, this interaction could be a bit clunky or slow via JNI, Java Native Interface. Panama aims to make it much easier and faster.
Why does that matter for the cloud?
It opens up possibilities for Java applications to more efficiently use specialized hardware accelerators available in the cloud, or to integrate tightly with high-performance native libraries, or even interact more directly with operating system features or remote services without performance penalties. More integration power.
Okay, that brings us towards wrapping up. The big picture seems to be that Java isn't just, you know, hanging on in the cloud era. It's actively evolving, optimizing itself.
Aggressively adapting, I'd say. Yeah. Its core strengths, that massive ecosystem, the platform stability, the huge developer base, those are still incredibly valuable. Add in the new optimizations for containers and serverless via frameworks like Quarkus and the core platform enhancements like Loom. It's staying relevant.
It's really a story of adaptation, from its enterprise roots to meeting the demands of this fast-paced, ephemeral cloud world.
Absolutely. And the demand for developers who understand how to build and deploy Java effectively in the cloud is incredibly high. Companies are betting big on Java to leverage cloud flexibility and efficiency.
So let me leave you, our listener, with a final thought to chew on. Considering the rise of these super optimized cloud native Java frameworks like Quarkus and Micronaut, and the potentially game-changing performance boosts coming from Project Loom, how close are we, really, to seeing Java and the JVM becoming the go-to, maybe even the default engine, for the most demanding, highest performance cloud functions? Could it truly challenge the newer, supposedly lighter languages head-on in that space?
That's the multi-billion dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
It definitely makes the future exciting. Something to think about as you explore the source material further.
Indeed. Well, that's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thanks so much for joining us.